I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, the controversy over Israeli annexation of parts of what's called the West Bank, what we've been calling the West Ridge, since the area is actually a mountain range between the Green Line and the Jordan River, and what's called by many Jews, Judea Samaria, the biblical name for that territory. Now, I'm sure you all know, in 1947, the United Nations agreed to a partition of what was then called Palestine into two states, a Jewish state and an Arab state. In that UN partition plan, that territory was to be part of the Arab state. The West Bank was to be part of the Arab state. But the Arab world rejected the UN partition plan on the grounds that all of Palestine belonged to them, and they didn't want to see any Jewish state anywhere in Palestine. So when David Ben-Gurion implemented the UN partition plan on May 14, 1948, by reading the Declaration of Independence of the modern state of Israel, six Arab nations went to war to annihilate the emerging Jewish state. The fighting in that war, known as Israel's War of Independence, continued until January of 1949 and ended with a ceasefire. The ceasefire line became the de facto border that separated Israel from the Arabs and is known as the Green Line. The West Bank was outside the Green Line and was occupied by Jordan and included the old city of Jerusalem. Jordan had no legal claim to that land, but the Jordanian army occupied it. Actually, since the Arab world had rejected the partition plan, no nation had or has sovereignty over the West Bank. It's sort of a no man's land, but it was occupied by Jordan. Then in 1967, when Jordan joined Egypt and Syria in a war to once again destroy Israel, the Jewish state won a decisive victory in what's known as the Six-Day War of 1967. In that battle, Israel repelled the attacking Jordanian army and pushed Jordan off the West Bank. In June of 1967, the West Bank came under the control of the State of Israel. While Jordan had occupied the West Bank, it permitted Arabs to live on the land. It extended Jordanian citizenship to the Arabs on the land. And at one point, it actually annexed the West Bank, though only Great Britain and Pakistan acknowledged or accepted Jordan's annexation. From 1948 to 1967, Jordan did nothing to create a Palestinian state, nor did the Arab world ask Jordan to do so. In fact, when the PLO was created in 1964 with the goal of liberating Palestine from the Jews, the PLO charter specifically excluded the West Bank as well as Gaza. Now, after the Six-Day War, Prime Minister Levi Eshkol offered to hand virtually all of the West Bank over to the Arab League in return for a true end to the war that had begun in 1947 and for there to be peace between Israel and her Arab neighbors. The Arab League met in Khartoum that August and gave Levi Eshkol their response in the infamous three no's. No peace, no recognition, no negotiation. As far as the Arab League was concerned, they were still at war with Israel and would rather not receive the West Bank to do with as they pleased, including creating a Palestinian state. They'd rather not have the West Bank if it meant making peace with the Jewish state, and thereby validating Israel's legitimacy. And so Israel wound up in control of the West Bank. And according to international law, by international law, Israel was duty-bound to administer what was disputed territory, no nation having sovereignty over it, and with a significant Palestinian population living on it. That Israeli administration has continued from June of 1967 to this day. And during the 33 intervening years, Israel has repeatedly made offers to trade West Bank territory, land, for peace. None of those offers were acceptable to the Palestinian and Arab world. And so Israel continues to administer this territory to this day. And during the intervening years, Israel has permitted Jews to create communities of their own on the West Bank, though somehow the Western world is outraged over Israelis living on the territory and claim their presence is an obstacle to a two-state solution, to peace, even though for more than 70 years, the Palestinian and Arab worlds have absolutely no interest in a two-state solution with the Jewish state of Israel. Which brings us to today, when there's serious discussion within Israel of annexing portions of the West Bank. The plan has caused an eruption of bitter controversy both within Israel and within American Jewry. Why has this issue come to the fore now? And what's the main argument for and against? And what's the likely outcome? Well, for some answers, we turn now, as we always do, to a man with a keen understanding of the political scene in Israel. He's a former longtime diplomat in the Israeli Diplomatic Corps, serving most recently as media consul for the Israeli consulate in New York. And I'm thrilled to have him now as JBS's senior vice president, Shachar Azani. Shachar, how are you?
Pleasure always, Mark. I'm so happy to be with you and with our viewers. And I am fabulous as we move forward, hopefully to a degree, to some sort of normalcy.
Absolutely. Okay, Shachar, let's take my questions one by one. Although I should say, as you heard my summary description of the territory called the West Bank from 1948 till today, any major revision or correction?
The only thing is that I imagine that your description is new, not only to some of our viewers, but to many other out there who seem to be hanging on to the notion that it's all about the settlements. I myself remember incidents where speaking on a major Ivy League campus to hundreds of students, we discussed this issue, and one of the students in a question to me said, you know, Consul Azani, the real issue, the real impediment to peace in the Middle East is the settlements. And the best elaborate Jewish answer I could give him was, which ones? At which point he said, well, the one on the hill. Or people really don't know. They use it as a mode of fashion to say the word settlement because they hear it often. But everything is in the details. What is a settlement? Where are these settlements? What settlements are we talking about? And remember, Hamas in Gaza keeps on telling us that Tel Aviv and Haifa are settlements.
Exactly. That's, Boit, you know, of all the things that's important for Jews to understand, it's that last point you made. To the Palestinian mind, there's no distinction between Kiryat Arba overlooking Hebron and Tel Aviv and Netanya and every city inside the Green Line, inside Israel. And most Jews, Shachar, don't get it.
which is exactly the point. When you feel that on the Palestinian side, you have a real willingness and understanding to acknowledge that we are there to stay, and it's time to negotiate a compromise, rather than tie yourself with a rope to the past and saying whatever was there 100 years ago in our mind, even if it wasn't really there 100 years ago, will still remain there forever. And that mindset has kept the Palestinians backwards to a large extent. You are seeing the way Israel was able to progress even now in the last few decades, where the Palestinians remained where they are.
And by the way, you mentioned that it's an imagination of what was 100 years ago. You know, I visited the Israeli community, and the word settlement is such a misnomer. I keep telling people and trying to show them on JBS, when you go to an Israeli community on the West Bank, it looks a lot like any town you drive through in Florida or in New Jersey. So I go to Karnei Shomron, and I meet a gentleman there who talks to me about how one of his Arab neighbors in the nearby Arab village was ranting and raving about how they've built this Israeli community, Karnei Shomron, where there used to be an Arab village. And the man says to me, you know, I have photographs of what this land was like and what was on it before we started building here. It was an empty land. There were no Arabs, no Palestinians, nobody living anywhere on this land. And yet the narrative is, oh, you took land where Palestinians were living and you took their homes. And in the vast, vast majority of cases, that's not the case at all, Shachar. And it's important that you and I and JBS keeps hammering the truth as much as we possibly can.
And also to understand, Mark, that in the depiction of a settler, almost a caricature in people's minds, a lot of people forget that when you dig into the facts, you realize that many people move to those areas because they can get a more affordable housing, because there is more connection to nature, and there is an incredible connection, almost intertwined economies, between those of the Palestinians in those areas and the Jewish residents and Israel, because there is such interdependency. How many Israelis travel to these villages to buy a watermelon that in Tel Aviv would cost you 7 shekels a pound, and in the Palestinian village would be half that? Or they go there to fix their cars, or they go there to shop. And it's incredible when you dig into it to understand that there are those within the settler movement who believe in a one-state solution, who think all Palestinians must receive full... there is a variety of opinions. The attempt to depict a settler, or an Israeli for that matter, as a monolithic expression of this is what it is, fails. And this is the complexity of this issue. And that's why we say, listen, learn, hence the importance of what you said at the beginning, and the desire for all of us to just take your finger and tap into the issue before making it fashionably, making a statement that seems to commensurate with a Twitterverse.
Beautifully said. All right, Shachar, why has the issue of annexation suddenly bubbled up now? Why now?
So like any good political issue in Israel and the Middle East, we can take this and spin it from a couple of different directions. Let me first of all take the ideological path. If I were Prime Minister Netanyahu, what would I tell you, Mark Golub, about why is it happening now? Well, there is an opportunity now of an administration that is a friendly administration to Israel, that has taken a different approach, some would say a much more realistic approach than other administrations in the past, that has been willing to show the Palestinians that their intransigence will come at a cost, hence the acknowledgement of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the move of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, all meant to accept a reality that is widely accepted and will never change when it comes to Israel, rather than play a make-believe game as if it's another bargaining chip, and in a way, utilizing this strategy in the hope to show the Palestinians that for once, their insistence on not negotiating with Israel will not result in their success, but result in concrete failures on the ground. So you have an opportunity here to reach a goal that Israel has aspired for many years with an administration that's willing to take that that step with you and do something that could not have been imagined in administrations past. So there is an opportunity here. The cynics will tell you that there are elections in the U.S., so it's in the interest of the President of the United States of America to appeal to the right wing and the evangelical base. Other cynics in Israel will tell you that Benjamin Netanyahu's next phase in trial is due to come on July 24th, so any distraction is welcome. And the truth of the matter is that the feeling in Israel is there hasn't been substantial work done in preparation of that application of sovereignty. And what do I mean to say?
Nope. I want you to hold on. What you said was wonderful. And you gave both sort of like the ideological and what you call the cynical explanations for why now. And I think you said it beautifully. I want you to take now these one at a time. I want you to be an advocate for the argument for annexation. What are the main arguments for? Then I'm going to ask you to be an advocate for the arguments against annexation. But begin by telling our audience, what are the main arguments in favor of annexation, regardless of whether it's because of the Trump administration or because of Netanyahu's upcoming trial? None of that's relevant now. Now it's simply, if people believe we should annex, what's their argument?
Well, as a litigator in my past, I'm happy to wear the different hats and take your challenge head on, Mark. So let's do this. I wish to say that this is the time to extend Israeli sovereignty to the areas of the West Bank, because first and foremost, it's not a controversial matter. The areas in question are already populated mostly by Jews. These are territories that under any peace agreement with the Palestinians will never be handed to any other sovereignty other than Israel, whether because of the population or because of the security and strategic ramifications for Israel. We're doing nothing out of the ordinary in this case, but expedite the obvious, just like acknowledging Jerusalem is Israel's capital and has been the home for all of the Israeli jurisdictional establishment like the Knesset and the Supreme Court. So is the acknowledgement of the Jordan Valley and the main blocks in the West Bank. Hence,
I want to make sure you made this clear to our audience. We are not talking about Israel's annexation of the entire West Bank, correct?
Very correct. We're talking about 30% of the West Bank that is Area C, and that's already populated by Israel, and that has been allocated by the Trump peace plan, peace to prosperity, as area that will eventually remain in the hands of Israel. And I will add to that the incredible, unique spice here. And the spice is, where are the Palestinians? There is a great hope, I believe, on many people's views and sides, that the Palestinians will take advantage of this opportunity to come and negotiate, to understand, like I said before, that if you do not negotiate with Israel, you pay a price. By doing so, you're pushing the Palestinians to a position where they can't just sit on the fence and hope that the American administration will fight Israel on their behalf, or that anybody else will do that. Therefore, anybody who undermines Israel's claim for extending sovereignty on the West Bank undermines the very notion of Israel. This is Israel. This has been Israel. This is part of what Israel has always meant to be, not only by those views like Prime Minister Netanyahu's. All you need to do is go back and listen to the late Israeli Prime Minister Rabin's speeches, who made it clear at the time during the Oslo Accords that that was the intention strategically. So let's take advantage of this opportunity.
You've well articulated the arguments for annexation. Now I want you to be an advocate against annexation. What's the argument?
Well, we have to understand that the situation in the area in the Middle East is extremely volatile. We have a Palestinian Authority who is almost entirely dependent on Israel on many, many levels. 60% of its budget comes directly from Israeli taxation. 30% comes indirectly from Palestinians who happen to work in Israel. And any such move is clear-cut a destabilizer when it comes to Israel's relationship with many Arab countries and with the Palestinian public specifically. The potential for the eruption of violence under these circumstances is great and significant. And under such a case, when violence erupts in the West Bank, we are looking at a very plausible scenario where the Palestinian Authority may very well collapse as a result of the situation because of the burden of these incredible riots, at which point Israel will have to assume responsibility for millions of Palestinians it never intended to. In addition to that, the many Arab states, both in the Gulf, with whom we've seen thawing of the relationship with Israel, and in Israel's vicinity, namely Egypt and Jordan, have expressed their objection to any such unilateral move by Israel, and doing so will jeopardize the current peace agreement we have with Egypt and with Jordan. Now, Jordan made it clear, because specifically the Jordan Valley is territory that was supposedly taken from Jordan in 1967, so it has a direct impact on the peace agreement that Israel has with Jordan. So the question is, we're not doubting the fact that Israel has claims to that region, but the way to do it would be through a political settlement rather than a unilateral move. And this is why I stay here on JBS, Mark, and tell you that this is the wrong move to take.
Okay, very good. As an advocate, very, very good. By the way, there is the argument that this is going to make a two-state solution impossible. Why do those who oppose annexation argue that somehow by doing this, it makes the future two-state solution less likely?
Well, for two reasons. And I'll surprise you here, because this argument is not only coming from the Palestinian side. The maps presented in the Trump peace plan are conceptual maps, conceptual. I urge all of our viewers to Google the Trump peace plan, Peace to Prosperity. Look at the appendix, see the map. It's a conceptual plan, which means it's an engine for negotiations. It's not finalized. That's part of the problem right now in Israel, that we haven't seen any maps of what Israel really intends to do. So in that case, when you have a blurry situation, If indeed, and there is a big if here, that the area that's going to be annexed or the sovereignty will be applied onto is going to be all over the place, it's going to be very difficult to have a contiguous Palestinian state. Moreover, some leaders within the settlement movement, whom you'd think would have, you know, ideal solution by this application of sovereignty, come and tell you that it's unacceptable to them as well. And that's for two reasons. One, it implies an agreement on Israel's side to establish a Palestinian state, which is a move that many of them are not willing to make. And the second element is a mirror image of the Palestinian argument. There are quite a few Israeli townships and localities that are going to remain within the Palestinian territory that Israel is not going to apply sovereignty over. That means that this enclave will be within the Palestinian area, and the only connection it's going to have to Israel will be a narrow road. And to some people, this is an absolute impossibility, which is why they themselves, especially the residents of these enclaves, object to it. I'll add one more spice, and that is another missing element in this quagmire of a soup. There is a territory that Israel is supposed to hand over to the Palestinians in exchange in the Negev, bordering Egypt, where there are Israeli communities. So taking that step forward entails some tacit agreements that may be very uncomfortable to some on the Israeli side and even on the Israeli right and ultra-right.
All right. Now put your other hat on, your hat that favors, you're now being hired as an attorney for those who favor annexation. How do you answer the objections which you articulated very well, one by one? If you're, you know, if you're on the other side now, you're on the side of supporting it, how do you answer it?
Well, I think there is a big element here of faith. If you believe that somehow you can get away with it, that there is an understanding that the paradigm articulated by the Trump administration is that of practicality. You analyze the needs and the interests, the security interests and other interests of countries like the Gulf countries vis-a-vis Iran, Jordan, and of course Egypt. You understand that Israel and those countries have a lot in common. And just like the Palestinian issue did not get enough attention, because to be honest, people have had enough with that issue. They've had enough with Palestinian intransigence, and these countries were unwilling to tie their fate.
Yes,
to
I'm interrupting only because I want the counselor to directly answer the charge. The charge is, number one, you're going to make a two-state solution much more difficult, if not impossible. And then there were other objections one by one. And it's interesting, I should have written it down because I know it, but I can't remember how you said it. The very first objection was not an objection to the two-state solution. And one of the things the side against annexation
Destabilizing
could
the authority.
argue is that, Israel has lived in this situation since 1967. We're fine. Leave things alone. Leave the status quo alone. Why do you have to, you talked about how it could start a war. But whether it start, why, if the other side says to you, don't let American politics influence Israeli policy. We've been fine from 67 now without annexation. Leave things alone. What do you answer?
Well, the reality is, Mark, that there is no such thing as such a successful status quo. Things are changing all the time. And just like you can't compare the administration that preceded the Trump administration, you can't anticipate the one coming after. And Israel does not live as an island unto its own. It functions within an international system. And as such a system, it needs to take advantage of opportunities given to it. And as far as the two-state solution, I will say, what's the difference? The areas that are going to be, they're going to have the sovereignty applied by Israel are areas that regardless of what happens, it's going to be Israel. So whatever two-state solution you envision for that point is exactly what you're going to get now. In addition, I'll tell you that not only doesn't it take that solution away from us, it brings us closer. Because if Israel indeed takes that step forward, it will have acknowledged the foundation of the Trump peace plan, which is to establish a future Palestinian state.
No
But
one sees it that way.
I understand, aside from the Americans and those who actually, when you look into the dilemmas, and that leads me to this very important point, Mark. Who is actually negotiating this issue? Israel, right? Israeli politicians between Benjamin Netanyahu and the alternate prime minister, the European Union, they sent Germany to discuss it with Israel, the United Nations that today had the UN Security Council had a discussion, the American administration. There are rumors about disagreements between Ambassador Friedman and Jared Kushner. Who's missing? Or to articulate it in an American way, where is Waldo? Or where is Walid? Where are the Palestinians? Why? How come nobody's talking about the Palestinian reaction? Nobody's talking about the Palestinians' lack of desire to negotiate. And this is at the very heart of this process. Because what I would have loved to see is the world, the international community, come to the Palestinians and say, you know, here is a risk. Israel is about to move forward. This is your time to, and the Americans said so. If the parties agree to negotiate, there is a path forward.
All right, I have one last question. You only have 30 seconds. What's going to happen? What do you think will happen? Will there be annexation? We've talked about this. Israel has mentioned this many times. Will this come and go, or do you expect there to be a formal annexation of parts of the West Bank?
Guessing is the best game in town, even though nobody can anticipate. And I will guess that there will be some sort of a move, even if it is a declarative move, because the Prime Minister's commitment has been rather resounding, not only from now, but throughout his campaign in the last three elections.
And will the Israeli people be happy, or will it make the Israeli people upset?
Well, this is the thing about this. Israelis don't seem to care that much about it, which is, I believe, really sad.
Fascinating. Shachar, as always, it is wonderful to talk about all of these issues with you. We will continue to do so. You continue to do all the wonderful work. And I love you very much. We'll see you soon. Thank you,
Always a
Shachar.
pleasure.
The thoughts of Shachar Ezzani, Senior Vice President of JBS. He's always able to shed important light on the contemporary Israeli scene. I hope he's given you some things to think about as you come to your own position on Israeli annexation of a part of the West Bank. My thanks, as always, to our director, Sloane Copeland, JBS's Managing Director, Dara Gollum, Transmission Manager, John McDevitt, and to the producer of In the News, Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Stay safe and be well, my friends.